you want to start with TNA because it's news, or do you just want to go to Clash of Champions?
But
you'll just be smarking out like a prick. Like, they'll just be
we're going to smirk out, yeah.
Yeah, we'll smirk out and start bashing it for, you know.
Because we're going to be bashing Clash of Champions, like, straight after it as well.
What if you were to join a certain club? Oh! You're going to join the Vince McMahon Kiss My Ass Club. Come on, it's not like you have to kiss some big old greasy, fat, hairy Oklahoma ass.
That would be yours, JR. Come on.
I've got a nice ass. He needs to kiss my ass! I gotta tell you, that's a mighty fine looking ass, isn't it? It can do tricks. Watch this.
Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of the Kiss My Ass Club podcast. This week we're coming to you from
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Just like Kurt Angle. We're gonna start the show off with our review of Clash of Champions.
This is a clash. Of champions.
We did a little pool going between the four of us, myself, Richie, Dave, and Chris. We all had our predictions down as who would win. Out of the eight matches, unfortunately, one of them became a kind of like a draw, so that got discounted, so it became seven matches. I got seven. Richie, you got
five, I think.
Dave?
I have no idea.
I got three, and Chris got four.
Chris got four.
Yeah.
So, guys, just immediate reactions. What were your thoughts on the Clash of Champions pay-per-view?
I liked it. It was there was regrettable booking decisions, if you want to call it that, but the matches themselves were good. But I just thought some of the finishes were absolutely terrible. Like, you know, the one you said, the non-finish, Cesaro and Sheamus, like, that was such a good match. It was unpredictable. By the end of it, like, we had no idea what was going to happen, who was going to win, and then it's a non-finish.
And
no
people
contest.
Were actually chanting, "This is awesome," during it.
Yeah.
Whoever thought when they said they were going to have it like seven matches, that we'd get seven really good matches, and the last one was probably second or third best match on the card for me, like, you know. But like, as I said, it's regrettable decisions. That match was a prime example. New Day against Gallows and Anderson as well, like, what the fuck are they doing? Like, really, like, it's that was the time for them to win the titles. Now they're gone back to being jobbers. Look at the way they've been treated since they came to WWE. Gallows and Anderson, it's terrible.
Yeah Dave, what was your highlights? Or lowlights? Richie's on the lowlight buzz.
Yeah.
Highlights was obviously the...
I was so smirky, sorry.
Everything is shit.
The women's match was probably the best match of the night. I really, really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the main event as well. The Cesaro-Sheamus match was a great match too, but as I said, the finish wasn't great and made more sense next night on Raw, I suppose, but with a pay-per-view, you kind of want the end of the story or something to happen. Like, what happened in that match should have been on an episode of Raw. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's... So, yeah, that's what I liked.
The New Day are over 400-day champions now, I think. Are they just going to try and make them the longest-reigning... At this stage of the game, they've done the 400 days, so they're just going to go and become the longest-reigning of all time?
Demolition is 431 days, I think it is. So they don't have to last another month, like, so...
That's, I mean, at this stage, a month is nothing. It'd be... I think they're just going to do it.
I actually feel about New Day, I feel like they're not even part of Raw. I feel like they're a separate entity to what is actually happening in Raw. It's like everything that's happening in Raw is completely... They don't tell you that anything is happening really at all.
Right.
They just feel like they're not part of...
Here's the New Day section of the show.
Yeah,
I get you.
It's like they're just advertising their merchandise. That's what it feels like to me anyway.
And they did a decent job of like... getting rid of the comedy act with Gallows and Anderson, turn them around. And by the time we went into this pay-per-view, I felt like they were like legitimate challengers for the title. They could be champions and they could have won. But now they've lost to them at Clash of Champions. They lost to them on Raw the next night. And now they're jobbers. There's no tag teams now.
Who would you actually like to see them? Who could they feud with?
New Day.
Yeah, no, sorry, Gallows and Anderson. Who could they feud with?
Enzo and Cass is the obvious one.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything at the moment. And it would be really good for Enzo and Cass to be in a program with two guys that are seen as legitimate stars and tag teams, no matter how bad they've been treated in WWE, they're still stars. Like, you know, they're still big names. But I'm worried about where they're going to go with them. I don't think they're going to become the next Ascension. I think they'll always stay relevant, but like, giving them the titles would have meant so much. Like, you know, still really angry about it.
Well, I mean, the other match we had, I mean, look, Reigns, he's back, he's a champion again now, he beat Rusev. What did you think of that?
There's that meme about, like, you know, that Vince is fitting well again when Roman has won the US title now. You know, I think it's good. It's a nice change. You know, it's interesting that, you know, it's better than what they were doing with him before. it's just interesting for me.
Yeah.
It was a really good match as well.
Yeah.
A really good match. Like, again, all of the matches were good. It's just the finishes I had a problem with. Like, but, you know, I think Roman was eventually going to become champion. And the only thing is the effect it has on Rusev, because now Rusev has been built up and it feels like kind of John Cena all over again.
Yeah.
He's just going to get done and get pummeled for the next three pay-per-views by Reigns and just go back to being a mid-card.
And coming out of the Cruiserweight Classic, how good that was. What did you think of TJ Perkins versus D. Brian Kendrick?
Well, like, a special mention to D. Brian Kendrick and his pants, because they were pretty spectacular. Leopard print pants. No, but it was really, really good. I think TJ is great. I think his entrance is weird. 8-bit gaming entrance.
Awesome.
I popped my cherry with the weekend with the Cruiserweight stuff. I just, you know, I couldn't get into it because I'd missed so much of it, so it just felt like, you know.
Yeah, so this is your first time seeing TJ, what's your first impression?
Oh, it was instantly, I thought he was amazing, you know. Yeah. I mean, I was joking about, like, you know, I was constantly, because it's the Raw and the SmackDown guy, I was constantly joking and kind of burying all the Cruiserweight stuff, but I was so impressed.
I call it the Snoozerweight division.
The Snoozerweight. it looks far from that. Like, it looks really, really good. But I was so impressed with, like, his entrance and the match itself was great.
And they changed the ring ropes to try and give it its own identity.
It's also the best looking belt, I think, in the...
Yeah, it's currently one of the better looking belts, definitely. Yeah. Oh, good stuff. So, okay, an average show, a little bit up, a little bit down. What do we think of the main event?
I liked that as a wrestling match. Like, they went 25 minutes. It was really good, really exciting. It's hard to have a decent match when you know that Seth Rollins isn't going to win, because it doesn't make sense for him to become champion now, and also would just hurt Owens too much for him to lose. So you're watching a match where you know where the finish is going to be. I didn't like the sloppy finish. It kind of turned into like a Three Stooges gimmick or something like that, where like Jericho and the ref's out and he's running around bouncing off him. I think if you're going to do it and Jericho's going to get involved, you do it a little bit tidier, a little bit quicker, just get it done. And just by the end, it just the shenanigans was too much for me.
Oh my God, Chris Jericho, Kevin Owens' best buddy. Owens with a kick to the bad ribs.
Oh no, not like this.
And this is it, Kevin Owens to retain the championship, and Rollins still in it.
Jericho has no business out here.
It felt like an extended version of Raw.
Yeah,
close to a pay-per-view. I actually enjoyed the, you know, everything Jericho does when he's on the screen anyway, you know, so I did kind of enjoy the finish because we did know where it was going to go. We absolutely knew where it was going to go, so actually seeing Jericho, you know, still made me pop and laugh.
Yeah,
so
I know, I love seeing Jericho out there anytime, so not too worried about that. But I think you just said something interesting there. I think with the amount of these, you know, pay-per-views, they're just better versions of an episode of Raw, or better versions of an episode of SmackDown, because, you know, they're not really pay-per-views, they're network specials.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a shift now, like, from where they have their cake and they're eating it too. They're pumping out so much. They have their network shows, and then they have now their
broadcast TV shows.
Yeah. So it's a similar change to when we got the Raw's War in the 90s. I think, you know,
yes,
it's as big a shift to that, from going like watching the you know, having SummerSlam, just the big four, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, and then becoming 12 pay-per-views a year.
I just think
it's another evolution of the way forward for them.
And there's nothing wrong with that, because I personally prefer like a 3-hour WrestleTon against, you know, 3 hours of Raw with 1 hour of wrestling and 2 hours of talking. So,
and they're getting it right. Like, it's like, it doesn't feel like it's too much for me anyway. Like, the card at Clash of Champions was fantastic. The card at No Mercy coming up in 2 weeks is really, really interesting. And I think that if they continue to do it the way they're doing it, I don't have a problem with there being loads of pay-per-views.
I go along with that. Yeah, because it's on the network and it's not as time sensitive. You can just watch it the next day. It's fine.
It gives you value for money on the network anyway.
It really does. Yeah. You got the world on its knees. You're taking all that you please. You want more. Come on. This week's Raw, we're going to continue our new game of Hot or Not. We're changing it slightly this week. So Richie's going to represent Raw. He has 1 minute to explain each of his hots. And then I'll be the only judge if it was hot or not, because there was a bit of a conflict there if Dave was also judging and he was rooting for SmackDown.
Hot or not.
So, Richie, what's your first hot of Raw?
I'll just talk about Raw briefly before I go into my minute. Like, it's a tough time for them with, like, NFL programming is on in the States at the moment, so that's what they're competing with. They had to compete with the presidential election as well. So you can tell WWE are trying to pull out all the stops to deliver a great show. They have two title matches this week on Raw. There's two title matches next week. They're trying to get in as many viewers as they have. They only pulled in 2.4 million viewers, where their average is about 3.5, so they're losing a million views. So you can see the kind of the desperation is there. Anyway, into my positives. My first positive is the man we just mentioned, TJ Perkins. I just thought it was a great debut for him on Raw. He fought Tony Nese in a really, really nice match. Some good high spots. I kind of feel like the Cruiserweight division hasn't been shown as well as it should be. Like, you know, they're getting put in mixed tag matches, they're getting put in fatal four ways, and I kind of feel like WWE are holding them back. They're not letting these guys actually do their high spots and be the cruiserweights that they can be. But I felt like with this match, it was a great introduction for TJ. He got a promo before where Brian Kendrick interrupted him. He had a really good match with Tony. The crowd was annoying me a little bit with their CM Punk chants during it. I don't know if you noticed that, but it was still a really, really good match with a decent finish. You got to see the knee bar, and I was really, really happy with TJ. He's my first hot.
Okay, Dave's counter to that.
Well, no, I'm just saying that the rumors are that there are plans for the CM Punk, that the WWE put people in there to
chant.
That's a rumor online. I don't know how true it is, but apparently they put plants in there because we haven't heard those Punk chants in a while.
That's true.
So it's a strange kind of timing.
And usually a smarky crowd would be into the cruiserweights because they'd want to see technically sound wrestling. So it was strange, definitely. I'd call it, it's a hot. I mean, they're trying to introduce the cruiserweights. I think the Cruiserweight Classic, the wrestling is better on that than it is on Raw. I don't know why that is. Maybe it is. They're being told to turn down the volume on it. I wouldn't know why they'd want to do that.
Yeah.
Also, it's kind of funny placement. I mean,
they should be a bit of nerves too.
Could be, yeah. I mean, and also, there is a different atmosphere thing, definitely, I've noticed from when you watch a star in NXT who you love, and that intimate setting, how you react to them, even on TV, and then you see them on the big stage on Raw, and it does feel different. So maybe
it's a lot of performance. They feed off the crowd and the energy of the crowd and the environment, and at a bigger stadium, you know, there's a more lackluster response from the crowd. Like, it's kind of informed the performance. Absolutely,
it's true. Okay, so Richie, you've got a hot there. So Dave, what was one of your knots of Raw this week?
The repeats of the matches from Clash of Champions. We had Roman versus Rusev, only this time we had a slow 30 minute version of it with a double count out, and then we also had the Gallows and Anderson versus New Day. Why after we saw it the night before? It just was completely pointless. Like, you know, the Gallows and Anderson versus New Day, they were both inferior versions of the matches. As I said, they were kind of lackluster. We saw them, but it was the same result, just no progression, and it also just made Gallows and Anderson look weaker by losing two and two nights, you know. So where did they go from that? Like, you spoke about it earlier, just a stupid decision. Like,
absolutely, you know? Would you agree with that, Richie?
I kind of feel like Cesaro sometimes. It's like, you know, I'm on Raw, but I kind of want to be on SmackDown sometimes. This week's Raw was pretty bad. But yeah, no counterpoint.
Okay, well, look, I agree that is a not, because it actually makes the network special pay-per-views kind of redundant now. If we're going to see the same matches the next night, it's one thing doing it on the next pay-per-view, you know, build up the grudge again, keep storyline going, but, you know, having the same matches you see the next night, utter waste of time, boring. It just buries the talent more. Okay, you're one apiece, Richie.
My next one is the segment with Charlotte and Sasha Banks on Raw this week. I kind of feel like coming out of a triple threat match, it was an interesting finish because Bayley took the pin. Kind of makes sense. She's only come up to Raw. She kind of has to work her way up. I kind of feel like it's like they're throwing Dana into the mix so much that you can see a potential face turn there with Dana. Maybe when Emma comes back, they can get back together. But my hot is actually just this specific segment. I think Charlotte is doing excellent work on the mic. I think she's amazing. I think they ran a Forbes article that was saying 5 reasons why Charlotte's the greatest women's wrestler of all time. And, like, I'm not going to argue with that, even though I love Sasha, but, like, Charlotte does absolutely everything right. She comes out, she cuts a promo on the Raw, and then Sasha comes out, and she's been struggling since she's been a babyface on Raw. I think she needs to be healed. We've been saying that for a long time. But this is the first time she delivered a really, really good babyface promo. And I kind of was sold on the idea of her and Charlotte, even though we've seen it twice before. And by the end of that segment, I was really satisfied. I was happy with the turnout, even though I was kind of worried about where they were going to go. before it.
I'd call it average. I mean, I'm a little bit frustrated with the women's division on Raw at the moment. I kind of feel it's a ship that doesn't really know where it's going. You've got these like four good talents that include Dana in that, and I don't think they know where it's going, so I'd call it, I wouldn't give it really a hot. So unfortunately it's still 1-1. Dave's up with the notch.
Trying to make chicken salad out of chicken shit here.
I know. It wasn't a good run.
It was the night after a pay-per-view. We're getting kind of the same stuff, the same people on Raw every week with very little progression. But I'm just wondering where half of the roster actually is on Raw. Like, where are, like...
Where's Jinder Mahal? Where is he?
No, but like...
I'm actually wondering. I wanted to see Jinder Mahal do something.
Where
are these people? Like, you know, you could be having little segments with them, you know, and just, you might land on something with people like that, you know. Emma's been cleared for weeks now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Emma's been cleared for weeks. I know Paige's not cleared, but I mean, a lot of what Paige did was on the mic anyway. Like, she still could be mixing it up.
That's it.
You know...
Because back in the day, they wouldn't dare lose a Stone Cold or a Rock to a physical injury. It's like, get your ass out there and talk. Sure, Daniel Bryan is, you know, in their eyes, permanently injured.
Yeah.
Get out there on the mic and work, you know. So
you have people here that could make the show more interesting and diverse it up, like, particularly from the pay-per-view the night before, where you repeated matches. Where are these people? They're not utilising the actual roster they have.
They have.
For a three-hour show, they need to get these people... doing absolutely. Something.
I'd agree with you there, Dave. So Dave is actually winning this week 2-1. Going sure, into Richie's last hot.
I'm pretty sure Dave's going to win. I just want to talk about SmackDown.
Well, there's one
this
hot for me that's just so simple that you might figure it out.
It is going to be my hot is the two guys that saved the show, really, Jericho.
We're doing just fine. Thank you very much. Okay? And why wouldn't we be? We're best friends. We're on top of the world. We are the WWE Universal Champion. Everything is going just hunky-dory for us until you came down, all right? Until you interrupted us. So you know what, Enzo and Big Cass? You're on the list!
It turned a really, really bad, frustrating three-hour Raw into me being very, very entertained by him.
Absolutely.
Jericho comes out first. He's adding the cameraman to the list to Jericho, and he's going crazy. Owens comes out. It's great because Owens is such a great backup guy for Jericho. You can tell, like, their promos aren't even scripted. They're just saying these crazy things off the cuff. Like, when he's talking about him, I didn't wear a suit because, like, you know, this is Dean Ambrose's hometown. You don't deserve it. Blah, blah. And then Jericho goes, he owes me $17,000. And it's like, he's not going to give me that. He's a bum, you know. And you can tell that they're just off the cuff, just completely. And then obviously Enzo and Cass come out, and Jericho tells Big Cass that he's going to sit on his lap. Which is
maybe I am Santa Claus. Maybe I'm going to go down there and sit on your lap.
Who are you, Santa Claus?
Maybe I am Santa Claus. Maybe I'll come down there and sit on your lap.
Okay. What did you just say?
I didn't say anything.
You definitely said you were going to sit on my lap.
Nope, I said I was going to punch you in the face.
Probably literally the best moment on Raw in years. Funniest moment.
Apart from when he handed Owens a scarf and Owens just threw the scarf on.
That is my moment. I was hoping to mention. If you just said... Owens, scarf throw. Yeah, those are hot.
And it was quite important because obviously Rollins is injured. They're freaking out about what to do from a booking point of view. As I said, the ratings are bad. I think if Rollins hadn't have got injured, they would have had all Rollins and Jericho in the main event, in a singles match. But they can't do that. They bring in Enzo and Cass, and it makes sense because they're getting the pop. But it also helped Owens. Like, Owens has... Since Triple H helped him win the Universal title, he hasn't had a convincing win. He's been cheating. He has looked like a weak champion. Having him just powerbombing Enzo, pinning him 1-2-3, standing up, closing Raw as the winner, is helping
the Universal
champion. I think so.
So I think even though it was a really bad Raw that was booked badly, I think that they saved themselves a little bit letting Owens and Jericho do what they did in the main event.
And the touch I liked that they had was like Jericho and Owens are in their street clothes.
Yeah.
Like Jericho's stealing his like his legging jeans, whatever those things.
I love when he wrestles in the
those,
jeans.
Those like, plastic trousers he wears. Like,
I actually think though the chickeny heel kind of thing I think could work great as a potential story going down the line because somebody has to call him out on it.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to put him more over with the crowd when he gets the clean win.
If
it's addressed like
when him and Jericho feud eventually, it's going
to
be epic.
There's rumors that Jericho's contract is up after Hell in a Cell. He wants to go on a tour with Fozzy. So they're talking about doing a triple threat match at Hell in a Cell with Seth, Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho.
That could kind of lead to
the demise of their best friendship. Yeah, but that's my hot.
That's definitely hot too, Dave. Have you got a knot that can?
Do I have a knot?
Well, can give you the win.
Yeah, there was just the Rollins walking down the ramp, only to walk back after about 20 yards. I just didn't. I don't get that.
Hey, Kevin Owens, you know what they say about karma. Here comes Seth Rollins.
Rollins said nothing was going to stop him from interrupting the highlight reel.
Well, maybe this group of security.
Holy, don't listen to these people. They're stupid idiots. Don't let them fight. Take him to the back where he belongs.
Come on, Rollins.
Yeah, give him a little doctor's note that says, can't wrestle because Kevin Owens broke me in half. Get him out of here. This is my time. Come on, Steph. Go redesign, rebuild, reclaim your couch, buddy.
Don't want to go back to the Attitude Era, but when would that ever happen with a Stone Cold character in the Attitude Era?
Yeah.
Even if you are injured, you're not cleared. You're two chickeny heels in the ring. Like, you should have got in that ring and, you know, swung a chair at them or something.
Yeah.
You know, we should have had, like, a big pop. The whole him coming out, the whole idea behind that is the pop.
Yeah.
Mm. How do you maximise that pop? By getting him in the ring and getting that shot of him in the ring.
Or getting him on the mic at the very least.
Yeah. You know,
confronting them on the mic, they
walked out, walked back. It's strange way to try and build that character, because he is changing over now. Like, he's becoming a face. So I just, that, it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, like, I think, take him off the show altogether. Like, maybe he can't do any physical stuff. Maybe he can't breathe. He hurt his ribs. Then just don't have him on at all. I do like this new Rollins. I like that he's not gone from, like, chicken shit heel to white meat baby face overnight. It's kind of happening slowly, which is quite good. And he's kind of like, I hate using this word, he's like a vigilante or something. You don't know what he's going to do. He's unpredictable. And I kind of liked that when he ran out to the ring. But as you said,
I didn't know he's going to walk back straight away. That's not good and predictable, though. That's like bad and predictable.
That's it. Like, true. Like, as soon as he came out, I was like, I was looking, what is he going to do? What's Rollins going to do? And as you said,
because he comes out, he gives you false hope that, like, maybe it is an angle. You know, it might be an angle, and he just walks back and you're, oh no, it's real.
No, I'd agree to that's not. Dave wins this week 3-2.
We don't have to talk about Raw anymore, do you know? I can relax. Red alert, John, shine a light down.
Blinded, but I'm still not shout out. Dave, you're up. What is your first hot of SmackDown?
Dolph and Miz's work this week was fantastic. The booking was amazing.
Yeah.
They've gotten everybody invested in something that we just shouldn't be invested in, with this stipulation that it's Dolph's career up on the line for the next pay-per-view and the Intercontinental title is up. It's a match we've seen, we shouldn't want to see it again, but with this stipulation they've kept us interested in it. They've kept the feud going, you know, and they also built Miz really, really well this week with the video
package. His video package was amazing.
They make him look like this absolute legend. Like, if you're a new viewer watching this, you're like, who is this fucking guy? Like, you know,
skull-crushing finale! Miz hooks the leg! Miz is the 5-time Intercontinental Champion! What an incredible night for the Miz! The A-lister has the title! I'm sick of all of you going, me the coward! You're the cowards! I'm the one here, day in and day out, in that ring, beating people up. Thank you very much.
They even addressed, like, the idea that this might be just, you know, a story being worked or whatever, but the Miz went in, he says, you know, you can't go to any other wrestling promotions. Like, this is what it entails.
That was a nice touch. I like that. You can't go to any.
So it is, they are, like, you know, what did you think?
I loved it. I think that, you know, Ziggler's doing great work on the promos ever since he had that feud with Dean Ambrose. Yeah. There's a new level of heart in what he's, you know, his performance and that kind of thing. He's nearly crying in the ring. He makes you believe him for that second, and then you remember, oh, I'm watching wrestling. I think my only problem with always these stipulations of, you know, loser leaves town matches, which was fine back in the old days of territories, because they were just moving on to the next territory, and then they just come back in 6 months. My problem with these types of matches is one of two things. We know his contract isn't up, so he's not leaving.
Okay.
And that means he's going to win. So, well, to me, it's kind of like, it's telling you the end of the movie in the first act.
That's what I was thinking, but apparently his contract is open in the next 6 to 8 months, and they could just pull it early with the promise that maybe bring him back in a year and he'd be so hot if they brought him back. Like, if he did lose, like, you know, I think there's a chance he could lose. I'm with you. I'm like probably 70% sure he's going to win, but I wouldn't be surprised if he lost as well. I don't think that takes away from the segment itself.
That segment is great.
I don't think it's the way they built Miz up in this. I don't think it's going to hurt him to lose either. Like, he looks so credible. When they put this video package together, you see him starting his journey in the real world. They went back to the real world footage. I remember when The Rock lost the IC belt to Triple H after a brilliant ladder match, and I think he came out to the ring and we knew he was never going to fight for the IC belt again. He had been elevated.
Yeah.
Even though he lost the match, he'd been elevated by the match, and he was going towards the world championship.
Yeah.
I kind of almost felt that with The Miz. Like, if he has a great match with Dolph, that's how he could
get him back into the main event.
Because they've built that video package, they've built that character in my mind anyway, you know, that he could be in the main event picture. Not straight away winning the title or anything, but in the mix.
I go with you. Jimmy is a hot rookie.
Going from like being main event in WrestleMania, being chewed up and spit out by WWE and the fans, and to make a comeback like he has, credit to him.
I love
The Miz.
Cool, that's a hot. Richie, have you got a knot?
My first knot, it's probably the one of the only things that really bothers me about SmackDown. It's the Kurt Hawkins vignettes. I don't get them. This whole fun facts play on Chuck Norris thing where he's like staring down in between his own legs, and it's just really, really bad. Like,
doctors recommend that each night sleep gets at least 8 hours of Kurt Hawkins.
The earth is 70% water and 30% Kurt Hawkins.
I hope when he debuts he does well, because like, he's a good worker, former tag team champion, he's been around for a long time, but like, these vignettes are terrible. They've been going on for a month now, and I just don't like it. I want to see what he can do, but I just, every time those segments come on, I get really angry.
It reminds me of the Darren Young stuff. It's like, these video segments are going on too long, they're not entertaining. Who gives a shit about Darren Young again?
And he's gone.
Yeah. So usually it's the other way around. Usually they put together great packages like this, and then they're just a flop in the ring. You know, usually they never live up to the hype. It's like, they've put the bar so low with these promos. The matches have to elevate them. But
it's going to be like Matt Hardy version 1. He's going to come out with the random facts about him every week and stuff like that, and it's just going to be the same shit.
But they already have that on SmackDown, don't they? They have like on the sidebar when they come out. They have like
with typos on every single
typos,
one.
Yeah. they've taken the V1 thing, you know, nearly.
Yeah, they have
the side, actually. Like, you know. Okay, look, that was a notch. So you're one apiece. So
it's so bad.
It is shit. So Dave, what's your next hot for SmackDown?
My next hot. Let me get my list here. It's
that's a long list. Jesus.
Yeah. Well,
how can you possibly pick two more?
How many times does it say Heath Slater on that page?
He was good this week.
He was, actually. He was very good. Okay, well, number two is the AJ Ambrose match, because I thought the finish of it was very, very clever. And we had AJ jumping out of the ring and hitting John Cena, who was doing colour commentary. Now, AJ gets back in the ring. Cena chases after him. We have Ambrose, who has AJ rolled up for a pin, and little Nate, who was reffing it, gets distracted by John Cena momentarily. The timing of this, you have to really see it to see how good the timing was in this.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that he had him down for a ridiculous 10 count or anything. It was literally he missed out on the tree.
Yes.
It was an extra second by the time he turned around, and it made Ambrose look pretty strong, and didn't make AJ look weak, because as soon as Ambrose got distracted by the fact that he didn't win, then AJ rolled up him, and AJ has a really, really convincing roll up pin. Whatever way he, it's
you're not getting out of it.
You know, I really love this finish, and then of course it just caused a tension between everybody. So John Cena came in, kicked the crap out of two lads, and we got this great picture at the end. We all know what's at stake here. It's John Cena. It's going after the record. Yeah. Ric Flair's record, and we got that great pitcher moment that we're all invested in.
It's like, in the corner crying, going,
Yeah.
Now, look, I don't think you'll disagree. That wasn't hot.
No, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's really good.
It kind of leads into my knot, which was
Officially, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So sorry, yeah.
We don't even need to discuss it.
No discussion necessary. Yeah, but that kind of leads into my not, because it is a part of that feud. It's Dean Ambrose beating John Cena clean. Now, the issue, I know that was in the previous week, but the issue I have with this is I feel like John Cena losing a match clean needs to be a big deal. John Cena losing to AJ Styles at SummerSlam clean was a big deal. That was the 11th clean loss in his whole career. I have some John Cena facts here for you. He's at 1,226 matches in WWE.
Yeah.
He's won 208 of those. He's won 962 of them and he's lost 208. He has a 78% win rate.
It's pretty good.
And this is his 12th clean loss, his first clean loss in 7 years on SmackDown. I like why they were trying to do it. It's to make Dean relevant again.
Dean's young. Just to specify, this was the week previous SmackDown.
It was, Dean, like, we know he's not going to win the Triple Threat match. So the way to make people think it is by having him beat Cena.
Yeah. Didn't work.
And it didn't work. And, like, you know, the IWC turned on him, like. And, like, I just didn't like the way it was executed. It was a short match. 5 minutes into it, they start doing each other's finishers. Like, what's going on? This is like the end of a pay-per-view match or something like that. And then finally, when Dean got the roll-up, I was surprised because Cena lost the match, but I just felt like it was a wasted... Like, a John Cena clean loss, like, should be something that is treasured and used correctly, like it was with AJ. And I think they're doing it just for the sake of keeping Dean relevant when I just think it was unnecessary. So I think Cena losing clean to Dean was enough for me.
I would totally agree with you. I mean, and Cena tried to sell it at the end, doing the whole sitting on the ramp, the
WrestleMania
looking,
thing.
Oh my God, what happened? Yeah. And it reeked of just, it was very cynical. You know, at this stage, you've protected Cena for so long, just don't throw it away to try and keep a guy over who the fans are slowly turning on. Yeah. Learn from Reigns, pause, bring him back down to the mid card, bring him back up stronger. Don't start diminishing Cena, because at this stage, you know, given what AJ has done and KO have done, you know, they came in, they've beaten Cena and they've kicked out of his finish and his big finishes. Yeah. So I'm not saying you've weakened him, but you've made him human.
Mm. Yeah.
So let's not make him lose to a guy.
I think it's something that nobody will think of in a while. They've actually wasted a moment, you know, as you said. Like, we won't even think about this, you know. I don't think it affects anything in the long run.
It has affected how I see Cena, because now it's like the Undertaker thing.
Yeah.
When you have a guy that can't be beaten, it has to be at the big time. You know, because I feel the way Dean beat Cena cheapens how AJ beat Cena.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
that's exactly,
and
the point.
That's it's actually diminished that whole little feud, I think, because we have AJ's being a heel and he's like cheating to win and rolling tights, and what we're doing is we're trying to show that Dean can beat Cena, and Styles has to distract Dean and pull the tights to get the win.
Yeah.
So now we're saying Dean is the best of the three of them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Makes no sense.
It's to try and book Dean strong. Because AJ's already strong and Cena's seen it.
But it's weakening Cena, and it's weakening AJ, and it's doing nothing for Dean because people have turned on him. So, it's a not, Dave.
I'd agree it's a not.
Yeah, okay.
Do you want to know the other clean losses that Cena's had in his career?
Okay. You're dying to tell us.
I am dying to tell us.
Okay, no, so I don't want it.
I'm gonna go in order. Shawn Michaels, Great Khali, Triple H. Yeah, I know. That was
that's worse than Dean on SmackDown.
And that was on a Saturday night main event as well, of all things. Whoa. Yeah, in 2007.
Are you serious?
Yeah, 2007,
Holy shit.
Yeah, so Great Khali, Triple H, Batista, Big Show, Randy Orton, The Rock, Daniel Bryan, Brock Lesnar, and Kevin Owens.
Okay.
That's a pretty, apart from Great Khali, that's a pretty decent.
No, you're right. Right. Look, everyone was folding to Great Khali at one point. You know,
Taker lost about 10 times.
They tried. So, Dave, what's your next? Your last hot for SmackDown?
American Alpha came back.
I loved that 8-man tag match.
It was just a great match, an 8-man tag match. But it just worked so well, you know. Gable still had his knee problem. You know, the Usos could actually, you know, work their characters and make their heel turn kind of stronger. They kept attacking him on his knee. But the Slater...
Slater's knee and that submission is cool.
What they've done here is they've kept Slater and Rhino as the underdogs despite having the titles.
Yes.
They've made the Usos look really, really strong and a credible threat going into the next pay-per-view.
Finally changed their music as well.
Yeah, they changed the music. The repackage is there, and, you know, the Usos are good heels now.
They are,
you know,
really good heels.
Like,
yeah.
The Usos, you know, couldn't stand them like a while ago. Like, oh, yeah. Really, it was like when they came on the TV.
Remember us in Dublin? Oh man.
Yeah. Ooh, so, oh. It was just awful. Like, and now, like, they're nearly compelling to watch.
Lucha.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the hot tag in the match as well. They gave it to Slater this week instead of Rhino.
That was cool.
I love that.
That was pretty cool. Like, it was really, really cool because there's just seeing him pumped in the ring, you know, at that moment was great. And there is a bit of repetition when we see Rhino always get the hot tag or Jason Jordan.
We spoke
always,
about that the last time. Like,
you know, or always getting the hot tag. So when you see kind of the underdog kind of have his moment was nice. It was just a well-worked match.
Well, you know what that means, Richie? That means they're listening to this podcast. They're listening to you giving out shit.
Well, like this is the first week where I really liked Heath Slater and Rhino. I wasn't looking going, Heath Slater's a comedy act. I was looking going, he's actually a star.
Yeah.
They believe in him. Now you can see like the arc here, the main arc is Usos against American Alpha, and that's where we're going to go to.
Yeah.
Slater and Rhino are going to eventually drop the straps, probably at No Mercy, which is fine. Like, but every single tag team in this match looked relevant, even the Ascension.
I was going to say the Ascension. Yeah, they looked level again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they got in, and they didn't swallow a pin like they do every week, and it made sense. Usos winning the way they did. American Alpha is a bit of a story there, and Slater and Rhino came out looking good. How can you have like a, you know, a four-team match and have all the teams look great at the end of it.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
It's such a clever book.
Well, Ascension and American Alpha, they are from NXT, and the multi-tag matches, all those NXT guys work so well when there's a lot of bodies like in these matches for some reason. They always just put on an absolute five-star display every time, and even if it's just an episode of SmackDown, like, they just always have great matches.
Look at that tag team division compared to Raw.
Oh yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's exciting. Yeah, like, all the matches are exciting. And
Well, they need it, because in fairness, Raw got the cruiserweights,
which
hopefully they'll make as good as the classic, and we, you know, SmackDown has the
such a short show. I mean, there's only three matches this week,
so look, that's a definite hot. So Richie, Your last chance here to draw at least on SmackDown.
My last knot is probably the worst backstage segment I've ever seen. Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt this week. I just absolutely hate it. He calls in Randy. Randy's the whole cat and mouse thing. He's trying to catch Bray. There's like weird like stakes up on the wall that he has to change. He's going in different directions. He opens up a door to see like a cardboard cutout of himself, which he's horrified by. He opens the door and Eric Rowan's on the other side, and it's like, oh, the crowd like, don't go in, it's Eric Rowan, the guy that you beat clean 2 weeks ago and RKO the week before. Like, it's like, if he opens the door and Eric Rowan attacks him, he's just gonna beat the fuck out of him. Like, and I just don't like this whole like Bray Wyatt's just like God, and he's like in this weird room, and then Randy's behind him with the mask on and all. I'm sick of this rivalry. It's ran on too long, and I know why, because they couldn't have their match at Backlash. It makes sense. Just let them do stuff in the ring. I don't mind like Bray Wyatt like disappearing and reappearing like the Undertaker, but this I just thought was bad. He starts talking, he's just talking gibberish like about Randy and about all it. I don't even know what he's talking about, like, you know. And it's just, I don't like it. And it's not just because I don't like Randy Orton, because I love Bray Wyatt and I want this rivalry to work, but I just hated it.
Yeah.
It was the bad. Shits. Yeah. Cardboard cut out of Randy Orton, watch out!
I don't like when they do these kind of segments.
Like, I kind of like that.
Not a good one. No.
It's like that early 90s, late 80s type stuff where you've got...
It was.
You can't have...
Vince Russo was probably favourite moment of this week.
This started in Vince Russo's, it was the shits. Okay, so that is a knot. So it's a tie... Three hots, three knots.
We should have just done like...
Two hots, two knots.
We should have done six SmackDown hots and it's not talked about Raw.
Well, there's Raw conceding. Right, SmackDown wins this week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because at least I had three hots.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talks.
Here comes the money.
We have a new writer room pitch from Chris, our good friend Chris.
Welcome to the Kiss My Ass Club writer's room. My name is Chris Brennan, the host of the Storybreakers podcast, and today I'm going to pitch a WWE storyline to the Kiss My Ass Club and see if they'll greenlight it. Now, we only have one rule for this segment, and that's that this doesn't have to fit into the continuity of the show at the moment. This is an original storyline that can be placed somewhere in the near future. So, what's on the cards today? Well, this time around, I wanted to focus on a brand new division on WWE TV, one that has a buttload of potential if it's done right. and that division is the cruiserweights. First off, I'd like to give the division a manager. Now, I know there's a lot of managers on the show, but I'm thinking it's somebody a little more hands-off than Steph and Shane. Somebody like William Regal is in NXT, but maybe a bit more appropriate to that division. So potentially like a Billy Kidman. I'd also like to keep it a bit more like boxing and have like a leaderboard and a ranking system. This is just garnish for the storyline, so we don't really have to go that way. But I think it would be nice to see a qualified and quantified system of who gets title shots, instead of when Roman Reigns or John Cena just gets opportunity after opportunity. I think it's really cool for the audience to just see a board and go, this person won two in a row, he moved up the ranks. So our storyline centers around who I see as one of the standouts of the cruiserweight division, somebody who has it, and also has the potential to go far if the WWE don't F him up in time. And that cruiserweight is Cedric Alexander. We'll be focusing on this character using one of his most notable character traits and try to take advantage of that. And that character trait is, Cedric looks like a nice guy. And that's what I see when I look at him anyway. Now, he isn't happy smiley like Apollo Crews, who just seems to be happy to be there. But Cedric looks like a kind man, someone who you could possibly take advantage of, someone who you could ask a lot of favors of, but might not expect them in return. And that right there is how we're going to build this story. We're going to take the nice guy, a pushover, if you will, and we're going to push him over the edge. Now, we can begin with the division manager looking at the board of cruiserweights and deciding the matches. He pairs Alexander up in a match with Rick Swan. The match goes well. Alexander's doing all the work on his side, looking spectacular as he has so far, while Swan dances in the corner, kind of goofing around. Finally, at the end of the match, Alexander pretty much has it all wrapped up. That's when Swan tags himself in, and he gets the pin. So we've seen that before. Pretty classic stuff. Alexander surprised by this, but I guess it's not that big of a deal. They go back later on, and the manager looks at the leaderboard. He bumps Swan up the ranks a bit because he's the one who got the pin. Alexander, being a nice guy, being polite, obliges. This happens again in the next tag match. This time it's Swan getting his ass kicked, but he can't make the tag. Finally, Swan gets Alexander in, but he's tired, so Swan sits on the ring steps, recuperating, quote, leaving Alexander to fight alone. Alexander does a noble job, busting his ass with the big moves, but in the end, he's double-teamed and pinned. The manager looks at the leaderboard. Cedric drops a few ranks because he's the one who ate the pin. Cedric talks to Swan. Swan gives him excuses and says that they probably shouldn't work together as a team. Like, it's not working out. So they break up. Cedric agrees, and they part ways. For the next few weeks, Swan and Cedric fight in different singles matches. Both look dominant. Finally, there's a championship opportunity looming. The manager calls Swan, Cedric, and Brian Kendrick out, and they're representing the 1, 2, and 3 spots that could go for the championship. But the thing is, all of them have been winning matches recently, so it's hard to choose who is the number one contender. So they're going to have a triple threat match, and it's a bruiser of a match. Hard-hitting, action-packed, flips, tricks, you name it. But in the end, Swan uses a weapon to pin Cedric for the title shot. Since triple threats are no DQ, there's no repercussions. Both Swan and Kendrick take number one slot and number two slot. Swan goes for the title, but Cedric is pushed back down the ranks once again. Cedric talks to the manager. The manager gives him some advice. He's a nice guy, but he's in the ring with wolves. He's got to dig in deep for that killer instinct. His aggressive streak is just not there. This kind of thing happens again and again over the next 2 weeks. Cedric is faced with situations where he would advance, but that would mean he'd have to use a nefarious means to do so. He chooses not. But in the end, the opponent actually uses the underhanded tactics to pin Cedric. All the while, Rick Swan is finding unparalleled success using these cheating tactics. In fact, Swan ends up winning the cruiserweight belt by cheating, so he's now the champion. Cedric goes back to the manager of the division. Again, his aggression is questioned. Does he even have it in him to lash out? After a particularly hard-fought cruiserweight match, Cedric sees that the ref is knocked down and his opponent goes for a chair. Cedric pounces, knocking the chair out of the hand. With the ref still down, Cedric is now looking at the chair and at the opponent. And if we do it right, the audience should be like cheering him on to actually pick up the chair. At this point, we also have Swan on commentary. He gets on the table, grabs a live mic, and starts berating Cedric for not having what it takes. He doesn't have that killer instinct. He doesn't have that aggression. It's at this moment Cedric finally loses it. He snaps. He picks up the chair. He thinks for a moment, then tosses it away. He snatches up his opponent and pounds him so bad that the guy's kids will inherit those bruises. Cedric hits his finisher. Ref wakes up. Pin, 1, 2, 3, Cedric wins. Over the next few weeks, we see a whole new attitude out of Cedric. He's not that smiley, kind guy anymore. He has his eyes set on Swan and his championship belt, and he's more focused than ever. The manager, however, says that he's too low in the rank to fight for it yet. So Cedric begins to plow through the division, winning every match, clean but aggressive, but with a brutal mixture of aggression and his fantastic flair. Finally, he gets his championship match against Swan. Swan coerces the manager to make it a no DQ, falls count anywhere match. Before the match, Swan's been chatting away to Cedric, cutting promos about how he's afraid to use weapons, but Cedric responds going, he is a weapon, he doesn't need it. So we're at the championship match now. It's Cedric versus Swan. They both are doing their patented cruiserweight moves, they're looking great, but Swan's constantly trying to go for a weapon. Each time he does, Cedric reverses it and tosses the weapon out. And Swan then tries to use the ring ropes, the trunk pulls, all those classic heel tactics, but he just can't get the win. Cedric continues to advance using pure talent and focus. Finally, Swan kicks him right in the tenderoos. 1, 2, 3, no! Cedric kicks out, but this time he's enraged. He sees the weapon scattered around the ring. He snatches one up and chases Swan outside and up the ramp. At the entranceway, the weapon's knocked out of his hand, but Cedric still gets the upper hand, knocking Swan to the ground. He then looks up high to like a really high part of the entrance, and Cedric begins the climb. The crowd should be going crazy because we love these high spots. He looks at the crowd, and then he launches himself down on Swan, using his body as a weapon, crushing his opponent underneath. 1, 2, 3, and new cruiserweight champion, Cedric Alexander. We have taken a man who was too nice for the business, who was a pushover and walked upon, and we've made him into a bona fide star. All we need to do, though, is to make sure we don't make all the cruiserweights cheaters. So we can only use a couple of heel cruiserweights to help push this storyline, but the rest of them are good old high-flying gentlemen. So what do you think, clubmates? Do we get a green light this time, or are you going to tell me to kiss your ass?
Like that. You get the green light just for that.
Yeah. All right, Richie, what were your thoughts first off?
I like the idea. I like the whole ranking system. I think it separates the cruiserweight division from the rest of Monday Night Raw. I like the idea of you win, you go up. It kind of reminds me of like the UFC or something like that. And it's an interesting story. I think the whole cheating to win thing is interesting. I think this would probably went on a bit too long. I think that maybe you could do something different with the two guys, maybe make them a tag team and have him turn on him and something like that. I kind of felt like, how do I not bury it? it was good, but I felt it was a bit predictable and a bit safe, but that's okay, that's fine. Yeah. Like it would still get the green light from me because of the ranking systems, because it's Cedric and it is quite different.
Dave?
Yeah, I mean it was very, very detailed, but I've always wanted to see. I've no idea why they've never brought in a ranking storyline at some point. Mm. You know, particularly when I was losing interest at some stage in the kind of the mid-noughties. You know, I would start thinking about like, you know, what would make me interested again? Oh, a ranking system. Mm. Like, that could be interesting. You know, I love the idea of Billy Kidman. I thought his choice there was
excellent. That was really good.
Spot on, like. Because who's it you mentioned before that? William Regal. And I was kind of going, who's he going to say for this? And you said Billy Kidman. I went, that's perfect.
Yeah, Billy Kidman's a man.
Because he's a cruiserweight champion as well.
The two guys that he had feuding, as I said, you know, I only popped my sherry with the cruiserweight, so I couldn't really picture these two guys because I'm not familiar with them at all.
Cedric Alexander is basically a black AJ Styles. Pretty much, like, he has the same moveset. He's amazing.
I'm going to do the same thing as I did last time. I'm going to actually cherry pick. But I'm buying. Yeah. I'm gonna buy the ranking system 100%.
Yeah, ranking system.
Billy Kidman ranking system storyline. I think I'm with Richie. It's a little bit. I've seen it a lot of times. And I think nearly having a storyline where a guy's cheating to win to get to the top kind of goes against the ranking system concept. Because the ranking system nearly plays into a Ring of Honor type thing where it's like, you know, it'll only work if we have strict rules. We can't have no DQ matches in a ranking system. Because it's not a true representation of skill.
That's a very good point.
That is a very good point. I quite like the fact that he, like, because he was the one that got pinned in a tag match, he loses the points. Or the same as a triple threat match, they team up on him. And it kind of makes sense in that, but you're right, though, when you start getting into
what you can get out there is like, people don't want to be, they don't want to be tag team partners of people. Yeah. And you've got, that can build rivalries without having to cheat to win. Yeah. You know, people being scapegoated and
I've always wanted to see them try this, so I wonder why they haven't. Are they so afraid of losing the drama?
I think it's because Vince just keeps wanting to say it's entertainment rather than sports. Yeah. And once you have a ranking system, you know, because King of the Ring is gone. A lot of the tournaments are gone, unless they've got a vacated title.
Yeah.
The tournament aspect is kind of gone, bar the Royal Rumble. Yeah. So,
and they are kind of treating it like it's just more of a sport with the cruiserweights. Like, they shake hands before, the ref holds up the arm.
Yeah.
So, like, the ranking system would suit it, I think.
And that's always been the conflict, though, is, you know, Vince's idea of sports that he used to have with, like, Stone Cold, you know?
Yeah.
He sees, like, there's the pro wrestling side of it, and Vince McMahon is the entertainment side of it. And
you have, like, Chris Jericho and for entertainment, why not keep the cruiserweights wrestling?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I would love to see them try it in some way, because, you know, I will always be curious about it if they never do it, you know.
I suppose once
you have a new division, it's a perfect opportunity.
The division's the right way to do it, because if you have it for the whole show, you know, if someone gets injured or plans change or you've already invested, it's like, say they had Reigns and, like, he was, like, winning all the matches, he'd be top of the ranking system for so long.
You haven't seen it. Like,
you couldn't change plans all of a sudden.
And
it
would make a very, it would influence how they change who's babyface, who's
exactly. Healed. Yeah.
What if they did it? Like, say you can have a normal cruiserweight tag match or cruiserweight match, but then you can have matches that are counted as ranking matches.
Yeah, this that is makes a ranked sense. Match.
Yeah, it's
like when you're playing video games, like you're in a ranked game.
Exactly,
it's
like
more set to cheat then, though.
Yeah, well, that's it. But you can go, like, you know, like this week on Raw, it's Cedric Alexander against Rich Swann, and this is a ranking.
You could also validate matches on even things like main event and stuff,
and house shows. Yeah,
you can actually validate.
And the best of seven helped a little bit with validating a house show match.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, because it counted. Well, look, there you go, Chris. We've bought half it. We've sold half it. We really strongly like a large portion of it. So well done, well done. So now it's time for Richie's mystery opponent.
We are watching the mystery opponent come in.
Okay, so far in our mystery opponent Chumstain challenge, Paul is 3-1 up on Dave. I'll briefly explain the rules again. I list 20 random facts about a wrestler, male or female, could be a manager, could be Virgil, we'll never know. And whoever guesses first wins.
Okay, let's go for it.
So I was born January 14th, 1954.
Virgil?
It's not Virgil. I'm 62. I was born in Glens Falls, New York. I was partly trained by The Rock's grandfather, Peter Maivia.
Brooklyn Brawler.
I was going to say that.
No, it's not the Brooklyn Brawler. He's on Chris Jericho this week, though.
Like, oh, is he?
I made my wrestling debut in 1979 for Georgia Championship Wrestling. This is my favorite fact of every one of these games. Like, okay. In 1983, I had a memorable feud with Ted DiBiase, which accumulated in the worst stipulation match ever. This is the match. The match was a loser leaves town tuxedo, coal miner's glove, and a steel pole match. Do you want me to say that again?
Is that WCW? Yeah.
I watched it when I got home.
It was in Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Holy shit!
So, loser leaves town, tuxedo, coal miner's glove on a steel pole match.
Wow!
I don't know what the story with the coal miner's glove is. I haven't actually watched the match, but there you go. I signed for WWF in January 1987 and made my debut at WrestleMania 3.
Okay.
I wrestled for WWE for 7 years before signing for WCW in 1994. My first WCW match was a controversial victory over Stunning Steve Austin for the US title. Austin apparently feigned a knee injury and I beat him in 35 seconds. Apparently Austin didn't want to lose the title to me in a competitive match, but nobody knows if that's true. I'm a former US champion and was the last ever WCW TV champion. But I've never won a WWE championship.
IRS?
No. I was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2011.
Ah, for fuck.
By Ted DiBiase. In 1987, the Iron Sheik and myself were pulled over by police and arrested. I was under the influence of marijuana and alcohol, and Shiki was under the influence of cocaine. That led to both of us being dismissed by WWE. I returned to WWE in 2005 and worked on and off as a part-timer until I left again in 2009.
It's Hacksaw Jim Duggan, isn't it?
It is Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh, good guess. Fucking hell. That was killing me.
I was about to give it away. I was in the WWE reality show, Legends House.
Yeah.
My final WWE run was a surprise entrance in the 2012 Royal Rumble and a couple of SmackDown appearances. Speaking of Royal Rumbles, I was the winner of the very first Royal Rumble in 1988, eliminating the one-man gang. My finished move is called Old Glory. I am one of WWE's most patriotic stars.
Good.
I carry a 2x4 to the ring. My catchphrase is, ho! Oh. I am Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Well done.
Well done. 4-1 to Paul.
4-1.
You're pretty bad at this game.
It's a hard game.
I have to go
game.
With attitude error, guys.
It's a hard game, yeah.
Only attitude. So, listen, thanks very much for listening to episode 6 of the Kiss My Ass Club podcast. I've been Paul.
Ho!
Kiss my ass.
See you next time.
What if you were to join a certain club? Oh! You're going to join the Vince McMahon Kiss My Ass Club. Come on, it's not like you have to kiss some big old greasy, fat, hairy Oklahoma ass.
That would be yours, JR. Come on.
I've got a nice ass. He needs to kiss my ass. I got to tell you, that's a mighty fine looking ass, isn't it? It can do tricks. Watch this.